You are listening to From Embers, a weekly show on CFRC 101.9 FM about anarchist and anti-authoritarian ideas and practice. We are broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples on land that has come to be called Kingston, Ontario, Canada, because of the thievery and brutality of the Canadian state and its empire-loving parents. From Embers is about fires, some real and some metaphorical. Fires started generations ago and tended to over the years. Little sparks all across this territory that we hope will grow, spread, and engulf the thieving state called Canada and the capitalist system that has plagued this land since the fur trade. This week on From Embers, I interviewed the Punch Up Collective, a really small collective of anarchists in Ottawa who are trying to keep on working together for the long haul. We talked about how they organize themselves and also about a workshop that they recently gave that was sort of a how-to for forming collectives of one's own. We talked a lot about formality, about process, about dealing with conflict, about working together, and about strategy, about anarchist strategy for the long term and what to do. We had a really long conversation. I had a lot of fun with them, and I can't bring it all to you here, unfortunately. So I don't want to talk too much in introductions. I'm just going to get right to it. Here is the Punch Up Collective in Ottawa, Ontario.
So my name is Alexis Shotwell, and I'm a member of the Punch Up Collective in Ottawa, Ontario, in Algonquin Territory.
And I'm Chris Dixon, and I'm also a member of Punch Up here in Ottawa.
And what's the Punch Up Collective?
Punch Up is a tiny anarchist collective that we started in 2014. We came together with just a couple of other people. There are only four of us. We were regularly encountering each other at meetings, at events, as part of campaigns, and we realized that we had a lot in common. And we were also people who were consistently present and seeing the kind of life cycle of other groups as they came and went in Ottawa. And we decided that we wanted to try to come together and build something that would be longer term. And Ottawa, like many places, has a really transient activist scene that's really connected to the two major universities here. So there's just a lot of coming and going. And we decided that we would try to focus on building a collective of people who were planning to be here, like forever, like until we die. And so that we could plan for like 5 and 10 year periods rather than 2 or 3 months at a time.
And how would you each describe the politics of the collective? Like, what kind of anarchism are you trying to promote?
This is something that we spent a lot of time deliberating about, actually. We
have, like, maybe the nerdiest basis of unity. I wouldn't want to say it's the nerdiest on the internet, because there's a lot of good anarchist nerds on the internet, but I do think that our basis of unity is, like, a basis of nerdery.
That's true. We're anarchist nerds. Like, we all feel very strongly about anarchist political traditions and have lots of opinions about them. And annually we do what most organizations would call a retreat, but we call it an advance, where we spend like a whole day together and try to map out the terrain of struggle locally, talk about the coming year, talk about some of our long-term plans. And one of our very earliest advances, we spent some hours actually talking about our politics and trying to figure out where we had overlaps, like what were the areas where we felt a great deal of commonality, and also where were the sites of potential further discussion. And the sites of further discussion were actually some of the most interesting ones. But as we expected, since we'd been working together in a variety of contexts for some years beforehand, we had an awful lot of commonality. So I think people who really want to dig into the nerdiness can actually read the statement that we have on our site about our politics. But I would say in general, we're anarchists that believe in trying to build stuff. We want to build movements. We want to build organizations. We want to build institutions when they're relevant and useful. And we want to do all of that in the service of trying to create combative, transformative, multi-sector, creative struggles that can fundamentally transform the world. And that means that our politics are really attentive to what I think we would call in various ways an analysis of interlocking systems of oppression. We have various hesitations around the language of intersectionality, but we do really all feel strongly about this idea that there are a set of systems and ruling relations that work in tandem that we have to oppose and have to undermine both in how we organize and in what we're trying to fight. And we're serious about strategy. Like, we think it's important to actually make plans together. And all of that is taking place within a context where we really want to draw on our heritage as anarchists. Like, we really do look to our traditions of struggle that we come out of, and we feel pretty grounded in those. And at the same time, we try to be really thoughtful about taking a non-sectarian approach and how we engage with people who are coming from other left traditions. And we're really keen to learn from those kinds of traditions too. We're not narrow-minded in that way.
What can you guys tell me about Ottawa? What's Ottawa like? Mm. How do you see your terrain in the city?
Ottawa's so weird to organize in because it's really, there's like these, I mean, it's weird to organize in a number of different ways, and not because the restaurants close early. There's all these national organizations, and so it's really common for there to be an important, you know, symbolically significant protest called on Parliament Hill, you know, every other day. And really a lot of those don't have any, even when it's called by national organizations that are based in Ottawa, they're often not well connected to the ways those struggles are happening in Ottawa. So, you know, most things that are happening nationally, there is some place of connection here, or provincially, usually it's nationally. So that's always a weird thing, I think. And then there's also a fair number of times where radicals from other places will sort of be like, oh, we're coming to Ottawa tomorrow. Can you set up a thing, you know? Or can you billet this many people? Or and
sure,
so I think
for
another
a protest.
Yeah, for a protest, and or there's a bus coming in. Or so one of the things about organizing here is always having to be like intentional and clear about what are we doing and why are we doing it, recognizing that it's strategically important sometimes to have people who are in Ottawa who can host things. And I have to say personally, like, I am so tired of, like, I just basically hardly go to things that are protests on Parliament Hill, unless it's like, you know, when the fascists were literally coming to Parliament Hill, right? Like, there's, but in terms of, like, I find it hard to go to photo ops just to be a body, in a way that I'm a little self-critical of, like, I'm working on it.
The only other thing I would add about organizing in Ottawa, and I'm not sure how directly it addresses your question, but it's something we've certainly thought a lot about in Punch Up, is that people age, right? Anarchists age, activists age, and the people who are often kind of most publicly present and noticed as activists in a place like Ottawa, but I think in many other places too, are young. Like, they're in their 20s, they're frequently university students, but not exclusively. We're not. Mm-hmm. Like, In Punch Up, we're all over 30. We were intentional about that. Like the two of us are in our 40s. And one of the things we discovered is that there actually are lots of anti-authoritarians, anti-capitalists in this city who are older, who were, some of them were super involved in previous cycles of struggle in this city and that got tremendous amounts of knowledge and commitment. A lot of them have had children. They have young kids now, and that means that they're not present in some of the same highly visible ways as some of the younger activists in this city. But part of what we have really tried to think about and have done kind of done some experiments actually in terms of some of our activities with how to engage some of those older people and see what kinds of ways they might want to be involved in movement building in our city. Because we're, like I said earlier, we are really interested in creating more multi-generational spaces and not losing people, right? Like, anarchists tend to age out, and we'd like to try and work against that tendency.
Do you, as Punch Up, have, like, defined medium or long-term goals? Like, is it a future-oriented collective? Mm-hmm. Can you share what some of them are?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we've been joking about making 5 and 10 year plans for a while, and I wouldn't say that we have those really elaborated in the ways that we joke about them. But we did kind of during the same period when we were trying to figure out where our common politics were. We were also trying to figure out where do we want to orient in terms of our common activity, and so that's a lot about goal setting. And one of the biggest, I think, most focused goals that came out of those conversations was about building movement infrastructure in our city. And we were clear that we didn't want to start a space. We didn't want to start like a physical space. We have much appreciation for people who build spaces. We're close with the AKA people in Kingston, and we have much appreciation for the commitment they've shown in building a social center. But that we weren't up for that. Exactly, yeah. So that is really the kind of long-term goal that I would say underlines a lot of what we do and how we think about what we do and evaluate it. We try to really imagine what would it mean to have movement infrastructure in the city that was at a much bigger scale, that could actually hold and mobilize and care for people in like a much larger kind of way that was really going to significantly challenge existing social relations here. And so that's a very general goal, I know, but that is really how we think about it. In the shorter term, and for us shorter term is like a year, we try to set out plans annually around what we want to try and achieve in the coming year and like actually have dates and months attached to those plans. And that's how we came up with doing, for example, the Getting It Together workshop about collectives. And, that decision to focus for some chunk of time on helping people think about collectives and encouraging other people to build collectives was definitely part of our, movement infrastructure goal.
It sounds like most of the work you do is like pretty outward focused. Mm. So then why have a closed collective? Mm. How did you make that choice?
Yeah, this is super interesting. We struggled with that choice. When we decided to have it be a closed collective, initially it was short term. We were like, let's just do this for a year and see if we like working together and what it looks like. And then we've kept it. And also like, initially we were also like, we'll have times where we open this, and we were modeling this a little bit on, there's a lot of other collectives like this. The one that we're most familiar with in California has a periodic cycle where they bring new people in. So it's not like every meeting is open, but they'll have like a yearly time where people can come into the collective. They're much bigger.
Well, to be clear, closed collective means that we don't bring in new people. We just are working with the four of us. And for us, that's not an argument that we're making, mm-hmm. about how everyone should do things. Like, we're not we are not trying to say that we have a model that is the model that everyone else should follow. We think that there are really good reasons for there to be open organizations of various kinds. I mean, we're not even dead set on collectives as the only form of organization, right? Like, we think that there's use for a lot of different organizational forms. And
there's uses for formations that aren't organizations.
Totally.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, that's what a closed collective is, but it's also not a kind of value judgment. But for us, I do think that the other major factor in our decision to stay closed after the first year was also about having a level of accountability to one another mm-hmm. and to the organizations that we work with. Because we had all participated in open groups of various kinds where there's lots of coming and going, and sometimes people don't follow through. But that also means that when you try to work with other groups and they expect things of you, it's sometimes not clear who the you is if it's constantly shifting. And we wanted to be part of a collective where people would know very precisely who the you is. And when we made commitments to do things, they would know that we were the ones making those commitments, and if we didn't follow through, that they would be holding us accountable. And that then we also would hold one another accountable in terms of what we say we're going to do. And so it's actually been kind of remarkable to be in a group where there's such a high level of conscientiousness. And as Alexis said, that's really also built in, for us at least, like kind of a constant question of like, are we going to be able to do what we say we're going to do? And that means that a lot of times we say we're not going to do something if we don't think we can pull it off responsibly. Or if people ask things of us and we don't actually think we can follow through, we say, no, sorry, we can't do that. So I actually think that that level of discipline has been really positive for us.
So I think because of that, maybe it's one of the least hierarchical organizations I've been involved in. My experience in a lot of groups, partially because I'm like bossy or like, you know, neurotic, I'm a Capricorn, I don't know, is that it would often be that there would be like someone was going to make the agenda for the next meeting, but it didn't happen. And then I get tense about that, and then I make the agenda for the next meeting and then facilitate the meeting. And so I think a lot about the ways that how people like me who are comfortable talking, who are comfortable doing those things, end up like taking the space of leadership just because things are a little bit loose. And so it's not like, again, it's not, I don't think that everyone should be in a closed collective. But I have observed what it looks like for me to be able to, like, not occupy that space of trying to fix everything because I trust the people I'm working with to do what they say they're going to do or to tell us if they can't do it. You know, they said they could do something, but they... Yeah.
So do you mediate all of your political participation through the PunchUp Collective? Like, if you... Alexis, consider like, oh, there's this issue I might want to get involved in, or like this group is founded I might want to get involved in. Is that like a collective decision or an individual decision? Like, to what extent is this like your avenue in to everything else that you do?
So, I was going to say like, oh, it's totally not meeting everything. I think like, so everyone in PunchUp is also involved in other things not that are not PunchUp things. I would say that, though, in practical terms, one of the things that I've noticed is that when I get involved in other stuff, I am tending to have it be more like, I'm doing this, it's for this particular campaign. So I'm not so much being like, I'm going to be a core part of another group.
It's true that each of us in PunchUp participate in other kinds of political work. The other thing to say about it is the majority of people in PunchUp work more than full-time, so like more than 40 hours a week for a wage. And so that means that mostly our capacity is actually kind of limited.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that influenced our decision, actually, about being in a collective and being closed and doing some of the intentional things that we do, because it was like, we have a really finite amount of time. How can we most effectively and strategically use it? And then sort of within that finite amount of time, we each also make choices about other things that we're involved in. I mean, some people are heavily involved in their unions. Other people are involved in other kinds of groups and campaigns that are connected to places where they're at. I, for a long time, was very involved in another collective as well that was not based in Ottawa. So, yeah, there's different ways that we relate with other political work. The one thing that I think is consistent is that we do regard Punch Up as our political home.
Mm.
So, similar to a model that I remember first hearing about 10 years ago in New York, where there was a kind of informal collective of social workers who were meeting regularly, who all worked in different institutions at different contexts, but they were coming together to talk about their shared struggles and their shared politics. So it was a kind of a grounding place in which then people moved off into the other parts of their lives, but they could come back and actually seek out some support and try and like gain some clarity about what they were doing politically. So I think Punch Up offers that for us.
And then what's the purpose of like the public face and the name and like the whole like outward edge of the Punch Up Collective? Like, obviously people cannot join the collective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think often people sort of think of that stuff as like a recruitment tool. But obviously I'm not looking to recruit. And then you could have like a more informal group of friends who like sit around the table and are like, oh, so what should we do about Doug Ford?
Yeah.
But this is something that isn't either of those things. Can you talk a bit about like how you chose to have like a group with a name that people know about and can reach?
Yeah. Well, we started off for some time not necessarily thinking that we would have, I mean, as you probably know, it is so hard to come up with a name for a thing. Like, so there was probably a year where we were like, what are we doing? Let's put on an event or two, or let's have a workshop, or let's do a thing. And deciding to have an outward face was partially about this practice of responsibility that Chris was talking about wanting it to be a formation that wasn't just a loose group of friends that that people could be like, if one of us was, you know, behaving in a way that was politically a problem in this town, that there would be some fabric of like, hey, you're in a collective with this person and they did this. What are you doing about that? Right. So not in a punitive way, but in a like being honest about who we are and that there's a project, right? That it's not just sort of hanging out.
Mm. It's also true, I mean, you're right that we're not trying to recruit people to join our organization, but we do have an agenda, and that agenda is certainly connected to the kind of political pull we're trying to build, but also our agenda is we want people to start groups.
Mm-hmm.
Of various kinds. I mean, that's why we did the Getting It Together workshop. Like, literally, we want there to be other collectives in our city with whom we can be collaborating on a regular basis. And so part of it was about putting ourselves out as not necessarily having all the answers or anything, but saying, this is something you could do too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could find 3 other people that you regularly encounter, 4 other people, 8 other people, and form a collective, you know, and start figuring out things that you want to do, and then we can work together. So it was, there was like, you know, an intentional outcome that we were looking for with being public-facing.
How formal are your meetings? Like, with only 4 people in such a small collective, and you all know each other, it seems pretty well.
They're so formal.
Yeah, we're really formal. I mean, we have roles at every meeting. Like, there's always a facilitator. There's always someone who takes down some basic notes about decisions and responsibilities. There's a timekeeper. So literally there's 3 out of 4 people who have roles at every meeting.
We always have good food before meetings.
That's right.
Like, we eat and chat.
So we do always share a meal before meetings, which is really important to us, and that's the kind of informal socializing time. But then when we start the meeting, like, it's really a meeting. And part of it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about, like, we're all really busy. And so we have to be pretty on it with using our time efficiently, and making sure that we actually get down what we are gonna do, you know, and how we're gonna get it done. So it's, and we always have agendas, and the agendas are formed also in relation to our annual advance meetings. So we have an idea of kind of like what's coming up next, what are our priorities for, say, the next couple of months that we need to make sure to talk about. So yeah, it's really pretty formal.
We do check-ins, we do check-outs. We don't have a vibe watcher.
That's right.
Do you ever feel like it's difficult to function so formally? Like, do you ever feel like constrained by that formation? Mm-hmm. You can answer that separately, I guess.
I don't. I mean, partially because it's like, it's a... it's like playing a board game that has particular rules or something, you know? It's like, it feels like, right, now we're doing this, you know? But it feels very consensual and, like, playful in a certain way, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we've figured out that this is a good way for us to organize it, and so it feels very, for me, it feels like, also because I talk a lot and can be kind of random, so having an infrastructure is very supportive for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think perhaps it would feel constraining if we didn't also have other times, right? Like, that, I think the fact that we intentionally have time where we, like, eat some food together, and occasionally, we don't do this as much as I think we would like to, we have, like, just punch-up hangouts, you know? Like, do other things that are not having a meeting, but are just, like, spending some time together. So I think... the meetings feel like a really particular thing that we're doing, but it's not the only thing that we're doing together. And then we also have other ways that we're just, like, regularly in touch with one another, you know, throughout the week when we're not meeting. And
so we have, like, a signal group that is always going, and that's how we organize things, like, who's going to this protest, you know, so that there's, you know, it's, like, nice to always have a buddy or three to go to a thing with. So, yeah.
You're listening to the podcast edition of From Embers, and this week we're talking with the Punch Up Collective, an Ottawa-based small, closed collective of committed anarchist activists who are talking about how to work together, how to form collectives, how to be effective in the long term. From Embers comes out a few times a month, and you can always find all of our episodes online at fromembers.libsyn.com. You can also find us just by searching From Embers in any major podcatching app on your phone. We are also a proud member of the Channel Zero network of anarchist podcasts, so you can also listen to us, as well as tons of other amazing anarchist podcasts at channelzeronetwork.com.
Can you talk a bit about how you do or plan to handle conflict? Not assuming that any major conflicts have come up in your organization at this point.
So we started thinking about conflict really early on. And, like, some of the first stuff that we did was reading a ton of stuff about interpersonal harm and boundary violation. And I think for all of us, that really... emerged out of just, like, looking hard at how much really messed up stuff happens in our different scenes. And so we read a ton of stuff in coming out of transformative justice approaches. So thinking about what it really looks like to know that the world that we're placed within that shapes us has shaped us to hurt each other, right? That's like one of the fundamental organizing patterns of capitalism and colonialism and heteropatriarchy. And So that was interesting to sort of be like, let's start this organization together and recognize that probably there are going to be times where we really violate each other's boundaries, or something really bad happens inside this tiny little group. And so we read a lot and talked a lot, and then we made a basically plan for like what happens when one of us hurts another one of the people in Punch Up. And that was really generative. And then we hosted a workshop called Planning to Be Good to Each Other here. And we've been talking a lot about doing that again and maybe making it more like the collectives workshop that we've just made available to everyone, because it became really clear that like a lot of groups and organizations, I mean, and we knew this because we're alive in community, in a lot of groups, organizations, and scenes, there is never a conversation about how to handle conflict and boundary violation before it actually has happened. And so I think we really feel like that's important. I would also say that, so we haven't had a thing where we have to really activate that policy, but we have had a lot of times where there'll be some friction or something. And I think doing that work together is one of the things that gave us a sort of like basis or a ballast of trust. So like there was one time where we were doing a public presentation, and when one of us kind of like stepped on another's part of the, like stepped in. And one of the things that was interesting was how that was actually something that could be talked about, right? Like in the debrief after that event, we could be like, seemed like that happened. And like, yes, that happened. I'm sorry for doing that. This is why I think I did that. That made me feel really like you didn't trust me to hold my part, you know? So I feel like that's something that comes out of having done this kind of work.
And what about like difference where it's not about like harm being done? Mm-hmm. So like, say two of you talked about it at home and you're like really excited to like build a movement and get stuck forward. And then you go to the meeting and someone's like, it's a trap. Yeah. Nah, I don't want to go there. Like, I think this other thing's really important. Like, obviously there's no harm being done there. Like, you don't need like a circle process.
Right.
But like, what do you do about like just difference within the collective?
Yeah.
We have a lot of differences. I mean, that's the thing. And maybe that goes back actually to the conversation about formality in our meetings. I think part of why we lean on formality also is I think we come out of a particular kind of activist culture where we all got trained in movement contexts to use things like consensus process as a way to actually really not to shut down conversation, but actually to open up differences of perspective and differences of politics. And so we have actually like really lively discussions and conversations about things, and also just in relation to each of our unique personalities. Like, some people in the group are much more kind of reticent to like take on new big things, and other people are like really excited to like come up with big ideas and really run with stuff. And so we like hash those things out a lot, and it's not to say that everybody's always like gets, you know, to do everything that we want to do, but I do think that we're pretty attentive to really hearing one another out, and I appreciate that, because I do know that one of the dangers of being in a closed collective that runs on consensus decision-making process is people just constantly agreeing with one another, and they're developing a kind of groupthink where there is really no dissent or difference that happens, and I think that's a constant danger, but I do think that to the extent that we can try to keep space open for those differences to come out, like, that's useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, we do, like, and often it'll come down to energy, like, what can we actually commit to, you know, like, what do we have the capacity to do? So, fairly often it's, like, this is exciting, or like one or two people are really into this idea, but others are like. Now, I will say that there was one instance of conflict where I was really pushy and I won and I was right. And this was when we did there was a big academic convention in town called Congress. And two of us in the collective, me and Amanda, are academics. So I know that one thing that academics like to do when they come to Congress is like go to parties and dance and drink with other academics. And so we had a fundraiser for a bunch of organizations, so Justice for Hassan Diab.
And Immigration Detention Network.
And Immigration Detention Network. It was only two. Mm-hmm. And I really thought that we should have a piñata that would represent Foucault's understanding of the panopticon, and the rest of the collective felt like this was a ridiculous idea. I thought also that we should have little rolled up pieces of paper with quotes about prison abolition plus candy. And they were just like, this is not. And I was like, I want this. And if I don't know if I can be in a collective with people who don't want a panopticon pinata. And everyone was like, okay, you do it. But then Dan came and helped me make the panopticon pinata and fill it. And it was very good. And so that was a situation where we had conflict.
So then do they have to help you build the panopticon?
No.
So that you can call it a punch-up pinata? Or is it like your own pinata, Alexis's
they
pinata?
They had to at least stand aside from the pinata, you know, project. But in the end, actually even Dan was like happy to help. And then everyone agreed that I was right. And it was good. But I have a lot of ideas like that, and there's a good balance of like the rest of the collective being like, that's too much of an idea, like we can't do that, and mostly I feel really like good about that, you know, because it's actually nice to have a bunch of people who are a lot much more realistic about how much mm-hmm. time things take. Like, yeah.
Is there also space for like individual initiative and spontaneity? Like mm-hmm. if you were having a party and you were like the night before, like I really want to stay up all night making paper mache. Is there a way you could do that with a process? Like can you sort of like still take your own energy and put
yeah,
it towards
totally.
Projects that are
yeah.
so collective?
Yeah. So like I got really excited about this idea of having quarter sheets that have two animals. And one of the animals is saying to the other, hey, what's happening in Ottawa this week? And the other animal is saying, I don't know, let's check the Radical Ottawa listserv, which is basically like a quarter sheet for this email list that we've created. And everyone else was like, okay, you do that. You know, and people were like, I'm, you know, can't. So yeah, that's totally a thing. Or like, I mean, even really like the map, making the map of the city of like what resources were like, it was like Amanda understood how to do that and was like, I want to do it. Like, I'm going to put it together, and just did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Although I guess the one thing to say is that whenever we put something out publicly, we really do,
mm-hmm.
we do have a procedure for like all looking at it since we will be associated
mm-hmm.
with that, and kind of like signing off on it. But yeah, there's definitely space. I mean, it's a lively group of people that comes up with all kinds of creative ideas for how to do things. And I think creating some basis for trust then gives each of us a sense of kind of like how much we can just run with things.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's actually important to check in
mm-hmm.
about something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about your workshop. You called it Getting It Together, right? What made you decide that you should teach other people how to form collectives? Like, why did that seem important to do?
So it just seemed like people don't think they, like, it seemed like there aren't very many collectives where people have intentionally come together to do a thing. And that when there are, a lot of the time they're kind of based around a particular campaign. So I think part of it came out of just like having lots of conversations with people about like, okay, so you're four people, but you're calling yourself a collective. What's the point? And being like, yeah, what is the point? And then thinking about that, like, why do we do that? So we sort of had a sense that there was space in Ottawa where that would be useful, and also where
It was like, just in that category of how do you build capacity? You know, like how do you offer something that you have that it might be useful? So we spent like a long time planning it and figuring out the different parts, like 9 months. Mm-hmm. And is that enough about why we did it? Do you want to hear what we did then?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So we did like, had this whole plan, had a whole handout with the plan of the workshop, and we started publicizing it, and we said that people had to register, like pretty early. Like we had a registration deadline of 2 weeks before the thing was going to happen.
Partly for accessibility considerations.
Mm-hmm. And that filled. Like the registration filled up, and there were...
Ultimately, there were 25 people who came out.
Yeah, I think we'd capped it at 30, because mm-hmm. the room for... Yeah. And it was like 4 hours long. So we had a lot of food, which we think is really important, and a lot of breaks, which we also think are important. And it was so interesting. It was like there were all these people that I had never met in Ottawa who came out from all different... like places of work, you know, like passions, like all different things. It was really fascinating.
What do you think they're seeking? Like mm-hmm. what spoke to them? Why are they there?
Judging from their comments, I mean, there were people there who were older than us and younger than us. And some of the people who are older than us have actually like more experience in collectives than we do. But judging from the kinds of things people said and the one of the major sentiments that came up was people were looking for ways to connect with other people,
mm-hmm.
right? Like people wanted to start things and were seeking out collaborators and were not finding good spaces to make that happen. Some people came because they were part of some kind of collective formation already. Like there were folks there from an art that were in the process of starting an artist collective. There were people there from a few different activist groups that already exist, and they were clearly looking for skills and insights for how to work together more effectively, and I think particularly how to deal with the hard stuff that comes up. And then there were people there who were like, I want to start something, and I'm not sure how to.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get some sense of like how to get this thing off the ground floor. So, but it really was like people seeking out other people and then some like basic skills for how to navigate stuff.
People, like there was a crew of people who were in a collective formation that's criminalized, and so wanting to have a space where they could ask questions and feel like safe enough to say like, we're doing this kind of thing, how do we, you know, organize that? Yeah.
And I mean, to actually go back to your question about like why would we do such a thing, like I think part of it was that, you know, some of us in Punch Up were deeply involved in what gets now called the anti-globalization movement. So we were part of a cycle of anarchist struggle that happened in the 1990s. And one of the things that another, actually a different member of our collective has said very consistently is that at that point there was just like a lot more
mm-hmm.
in the way of affinity groups, collectives, networks, spokes councils, basically ways that people were working together in directly democratic formations that were then federating with and collaborating with others. And one of the things we've observed in our conversations with younger activists in the last, say, 5 to 10 years is that a lot of people don't know about that history and also don't even feel like they know how to make that happen. And so we were keen to try to like share some of that. And I mean, ultimately toward like our hope, and it says it actually right on the, you know, the workshop outline, which is now publicly available for anybody to use. One of our two goals on there was grow other collectives in our city.
So we've put all this stuff from that workshop up
mm-hmm.
so that if like, you are like, I want to do a collective workshop, or anyone,
mm-hmm.
you know, could just have the handouts, have the structure, and that it could be actually like
self-run workshop, right? So like if there was a crew of people who were like, I think we might want to do a collective, what are the different parts of this? So there's sort of like people in various cities who have been like, oh yeah, I'm going to take that stuff and run this workshop. And so that's also part of, I think one of the things we're interested in is like, how do we spread, mm-hmm. yeah, just how do we spread out work that's already happened so that it's available for people's use and appropriation, mm-hmm. like, yeah.
And modification.
Yeah.
How, like, in that work, how narrowly or broadly are you defining collective? Like, what counts as a collective?
Mm-hmm. I mean, for the purposes of that work, we defined a collective as a small group, generally less than 15 people, that works together in a consistent way on a non-hierarchical basis.
Okay.
We didn't actually elaborate much more than that, and we mainly just pointed to the fact that there are lots of different forms that can take.
And what would you tell people makes like an effective collective versus a useless one? Like, what are your tips?
I mean, some of the stuff that we really highlight in the workshop and in the materials around the workshop is about intentionality.
Mm-hmm.
So like making some choices early on about who you are and what you're trying to do together. And some of those choices are things we've already discussed, like, are you going to be a closed group? Are you going to be an open group? Part of it's about your orientation. Like, what is it that's bringing you together? Like, are you going to do this particular short-term media project? Are you going to be launching a campaign that's going to be trying to involve other groups in some way that's, you know, got some real longevity to it? Are you going to be functioning more or less as an affinity group that's just like a crew of people who really care about each other and have some shared politics and are going to try to do stuff together? And so just like really naming what you're doing and then making some plans about how you're going to work so that people involved have a clear understanding of how decisions are going to get made and who's going to be responsible for what and how that's all going to get communicated. Those, like, for us, that's the kind of, like, fundamental stuff that we highlight in the workshop around the intentionality. Now, there's many, many other aspects to it. I mean, there's a whole part of the workshop where we just talk about the importance of anti-oppression analysis for thinking about effective collectives. And actually, as Alexis has pointed out, there are actually lots of groups that don't have any anti-oppression analysis who manage to carry on and be effective. I mean, there are groups on the far right who like categorically don't have any anti-oppression analysis, but they manage to keep doing things together. So it's obvious that people can be effective in some way without actually sharing our political perspective. But we do think that developing some anti-oppression analysis of ourselves and our situation can really strengthen the work, partly in terms of recognizing the kinds of power differentials that we bring into groups and the ways that those differences of advantage and oppression can actually really destabilize groups and push people out if we're not conscious about them. And those have material effects, but they're also about interpersonal
mm-hmm.
dynamics and how decisions get made and how informal power happens. And I guess I'd say the last thing on this is just that we think one of the ways that collectives most consistently fail is when they pretend to be structureless or like not having any decisions about who's going to do what and just kind of being a sort of free-for-all. And those are the kind of situations where actually the very forms of socialization that go along with how oppression works in the society tend to manifest, right? Like, it's no surprise that the people who tend to move into activist spaces and through activist groups with a great deal of confidence and assurance and skill are socialized as white middle-class cis men. And so pretending like there's no, like, none of that's going on and like we're all somehow on an even playing field or something is actually a recipe for things to go really badly, and often to really fall apart. Part of our understanding of collectives being effective too is not just about their internal effectiveness, but about their ability to like have impacts in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to make sure that we don't leave aside the other component, which is that part of what we highlight in that workshop is the importance of making plans and then actually reflecting back on what we're doing and recognizing when we do things well and when we don't do things well and trying to constantly learn from that. So I think a lot of that is about setting goals, which is something that we have as a practice in Punch Up. But just as importantly, it's about setting times to evaluate together.
What are things that you see on the horizon in the current political moment? What's next?
So we are really concerned about the state of the world. Like this is a time when things are really quite rough, and part of that is about the state of ecosystems on the planet and the capacities for life making. And so that's like a existential question. And part of it is about the far right in power in the streets and at the highest places of government in many places, including in our province, Ontario. And so we... with the Ford government coming into office over the summer, we really started thinking more about this context and what we could do. We're not, as Punch Up, very comfortable launching campaigns. We feel like we're a tiny group, and it's kind of weird for us to be like, all right, you all should do this thing, and we're going to like lead the way. We are anti-vanguardist. But we're quite interested in participating in campaigns with other organizations. And so we began collaborating with a set of groups that were sharing some similar concerns about the Ford government and about the kinds of like rollbacks and devastation that seemed to be coming. And we have been putting together this thing that is now called the Ottawa Coalition Against Ford, with multiple other organizations that's been meeting regularly and is about to actually start bringing in even more groups. And we're interested in starting to plan together about what we can do in a really broad-based way in this city to fight back and to protect the kinds of targets, because it's clear that the Ford government is following a strategy that seems common among a lot of these right-wing governments right now, which is to go after lots of different sectors all at once. And we're trying to figure out how to have each other's backs in that kind of climate. So that's one of our major things right now that we expect will be ongoing, unfortunately. And we've also, on the back burner, as Alexis mentioned earlier, we've been tracking the police in the city and their very, very long history of violence and misconduct. And we're looking at some point in the not too distant future to start actually compiling some of that in a public way. Because here, as in many other places, whenever the cops hurt somebody, there is some kind of outcry about it, justified, but frequently it's not very much connected to a whole history of the cops hurting people in our communities, and we'd like to contribute toward having a kind of longer view of the Ottawa Police Department as a violent institution in our city.
What do you hope that your collective could specifically lend to a collective effort against Ford, like a broader collective effort against Ford that's coalitional?
I mean, that's been one of the places where that stuff about being kind of nerdy and organized is, I think we feel like we can offer. So one thing is that we're steady, so that means that we can really be like, there will always be someone who shows up to those meetings, and like we have a lot of experience putting together an agenda for a meeting, and so we can be doing some of the like helping people learn how to facilitate meetings, helping people, you know, and then I think just that piece about having an orientation that's like, we're here to like for the long haul, and
there is something that is worth working on. Part of the thing that Punch Up gives me as a person is a sense of confidence in the possibility of collective transformation, like a reminder that when things are so shitty, there's power in working together. And I don't want to say that that's something that other people would look at Punch Up and see, but it's a reason that I can show up to a... It's a reason, like, having that confidence is something that Punch Up gives me that then gives me a reason to, like, show up to the meeting or, like, reserve the room or... So that kind of duration, confidence in duration is something that I feel like we need right now, because we're gonna have a lot of struggles, right? And so it's also thinking beyond Ford, right, or beyond Ontario. It's like that quote that it's not clear that it actually ever was actually said, but the future is already here. It's just not very evenly distributed yet. It's just like, you know, the distribution of suffering is so stark that we can see already that in this world there needs to be people working steadily and radically in a long-term way, where we can't collapse into despair if we actually want to, you know, save the world in some formation, whatever that means to us, you know? So there's a certain way that I just feel like having collectives is just a little, it's like a bulwark against despair. It's like a way to be like, we can't do it all, right? But we can do something. What can we do? You know, what are we connected to? What are we attached to? What do we have? What do we have a relationship with that we can build toward?
I would just add that in terms of the coalition, I think part of what we bring in addition to those things is we have a set of politics. And we have been pretty open about those politics, not in a way that's about trying to like slap down other people or claim that we have a correct line that other people have to adhere to, but we're those politics lead us in certain directions. Like, it means that we have particular anti-colonial commitments. It means that we understand that there is a set of systems that are causing these problems. It's not just a particular government. And it means that we believe in the power of people. You know, we have, part of the way that we talk about this sometimes is in terms of a theory of change. And like, we have a theory of change that's motivated by mass combative social movements. It's not about lawyers or politicians, various kinds of professionals doing their thing. It's about ordinary people engaging in collective action. And that's something that we bring to this coalition as, you know, what we're interested in trying to build. And it's, in that sense, it's gratifying because a coalition creates an opportunity for unlikely alliances, mm-hmm. where we're working with people who we've never worked with before and organizations we've never really encountered, we've never heard of, who we at times, I think, assumed wrongly would not be interested in engaging with some of our politics. But in fact, maybe it's about this political moment or other things too, or us just not actually accurately perceiving what's going on. There's some, I think, substantial basis for building resistance right now. And I think people are much more open to a kind of direct action, mm-hmm. people-powered approach, mm-hmm. than they have been in previous periods.
yeah. Woo-hoo! This is M1, M-A-Uno, M-A-Dele-Hente, Comprende, Intende, you feel me? I'm one half of Dead Prez. To tell it like it is, everything is political rap duo. Here holding my middle finger up to imperialism worldwide. And you in tune right now to the rebel beat.
The Rebel Beat is a monthly podcast of radical political music across different genres and across different continents. It's the mixtape to a riot against police brutality. It's your nightly newscast set to bass and beats. It's protest anthems from Hong Kong to Istanbul to Ferguson to Montreal. Give it a listen at rebelbeatradio.com or subscribe today on all your favorite podcast platforms.